Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by Gordon Law School of Zapella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. Stay tuned for tonight's special report on critical condition right after this message. You know, those who already walk submissively will say that there is no cause for alarm, but submissiveness is not our heritage. The First Amendment was designed to allow rebellion to remain as our heritage, and the Constitution was designed to keep government off the backs of the people. The Bill of Rights was added to keep the precincts of belief and expression of the press, of political and social activities, free from government surveillance. Now, I wish I'd have thought of that, but that quotation comes from our Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas. Back about 1970. You know, our princes and politicians beller in the halls of Congress for more taxes, more spending, and more gun control, but you and I haven't heard anything intelligent come out of a politician's mouth in more than 75 years, now have we? That's why I contend that the only real reason, logic, or common sense left in America comes from our courts, not from the political process, or the politicians, or the lawyers, or the bureaucrats. Old Mayor Rothschild summed it all up with a flair when he said, "You give me the money power, and I care not who makes the laws. Well, you give me the judicial power, and I care not who makes the laws either, because the real power in the United States is in the courts, not in politics." Now, if you'd like to tap into that power of the courts, why don't you call me at the law school, 417-273-4967, and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, best of all, it's free of charge. Courtroom strategy and procedures also available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, just go to the webpage, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? All right, last time we're talking about critical condition, talking about the costs involved in American healthcare and the system that is used to determine how long you stay in the hospital. Doctors don't agree with it, but the insurance companies hold the whip hand, well, at least they do at this point in time, and 27% of the gross income of your doctor, 27% of his gross income, goes to administrative costs, filling out insurance returns and reports and et cetera, paperwork. Not healthcare, not doctor-patient relationship. 27% of his money goes to paperwork. 27% of the cost of your medical care, 27% of the cost of that doctor's office visit is in shuffling paper and paying all of that army of paper pushers in the medical care industry. I got to tell you a little story right here. Remember, the next time that you leave your doctor's office, just look at the invoice that you've been asked to drop off on your way out, and it probably will be a legal-sized form filled with rows of boxes. So whether your examination was brief or comprehensive, and whether you're given tests or evaluated for a specific ailment, there seems to be a box for just about every medical condition and procedure. And next to each one of those boxes is a five-digit number. 90658 is a flu shot. 95115 is an allergy injection. 81002 is your analysis. The simple, most common number is 99213, a routine office visit. Depending on what was done during the visit, your doctor will check one or more of those boxes. That's the bureaucracy. Now, my wife a few years back stepped in a hole out here in the North 40, and she broke her ankle. And we brought her in the house, and I said, well, I guess I better see if we can get you down to the hospital. We kind of figured that with a broken ankle, we'd probably have to go to the hospital to have it x-rayed and a cast put on it. Now, remember, we don't have any insurance, so I'm the guy that has to pay the bill. So naturally, when you break your ankle, the first thought is, gee, I wonder how much this is going to cost. So I called the hospital down in Mountain Home, and then I said, nice young lady called, answered, and I said, seems like my wife may have broken her ankle, and we need to come down to the hospital, probably have it x-rayed and cast put on it. Can you tell me how much that's going to cost? And she said, no, there's no way to know. Now, that was kind of shocking. You know, if you walked into your Chevrolet dealer and you said, that car over there, I'd like to know how much that costs. And if he said to you, well, gee, sir, there's just no way to know. You know, you walk into Denny's restaurant and you sit down for lunch and you say, gee, how much is a hamburger and fries? And the waitress says, gee, there's just no way to know. What'd you think of that? So I was kind of concerned. You see, the reason I was concerned is because I don't know whether I should take $5, $500, or $5,000 down there to pay the bill. So I'd kind of like to have an idea. You know, not very often do you have a broken ankle, and you kind of figured that if you called the hospital, they ought to be able to tell you, you know, within, you know, some ballpark range just about how much it's going to cost you to fix a broken ankle. So I persisted, and I said, well, now, ma'am, have you ever had a broken ankle come into the hospital before? And she says, oh, yeah, many, many times. I said, well, how much did one of those broken ankles cost? And she says, I don't know. And there's no way to figure it out and no way to know, and I can't tell you. And I said, well, let's try this another way. Does it cost more than $500? Now, boys and girls, let me tell you, this girl is pre-programmed. They're told, don't you tell what the prices are, because it'll shock people. If they knew what it cost to fix a broken ankle, you know, they'd be too shocked. So what we want them to do is to come down here, sign the admittance form, and we'll do the work, and then we'll just send them the bill. After we've got their signed agreement and contract, we'll send them a bill. Now, there's a different price for insurance companies than there is for you and me. If you're not insured, you pay the highest possible price. Well, okay, if that's the case, then I'll pay the highest possible price. But would you tell me what it is? And the answer is no, we will not tell you what that highest possible price is. So I hung up and I got in the Yellow Pages and I found a clinic over in West Plains, and I called the clinic and I asked the same question. I said, my wife apparently broke her ankle, and can you tell me about how much that's going to cost? And another nice young lady on the other end of the phone said $235. Well, I just got off the phone with a nice young lady down in Mountain Homes Hospital, and I said, now, wait a minute. Does that include x-rays? Oh, yes, yeah. Does that include the cast? Oh, yeah, yeah. Does that include taking the cast off after it heals up? Oh, yeah, yeah. Does that include the doctor's visit? And yeah. Well, what other hidden costs might there be? And she said, well, I don't know of any, but I guess there could be something, but I don't know of any. I said, $235. Yep, $235. I said, thank you very much. We'll be right over. So I told the wife, I said, well, I guess we could call around and get some comparative prices, but I said, you know, if they could put a cast on that, take it off, x-ray it, determine whether it's a sprain or a broken ankle for $235, you know. I said, shucks, sounds all right to me. So we went over to the hospital, and in this case, the clinic, and I had it taken care of. So you'll find out that if you pay premiums, you're probably paying in the neighborhood of $10,000 a year in insurance premiums. Now, over the last 20 years, I haven't spent $1,000 on doctors or hospitals. And I've got a family just like you did, and for many years I had four little girls here. And my medical costs weren't very high, and my hospital insurance wasn't very high, and that's because I never had insurance. I just paid cash, just like my dad did. You see, when I was a kid, when you had a medical problem, you went to the doctor's office, and a doctor's visit was $5. When you got through, you just reached in your wallet, pulled out a $5 bill, paid it, and walked out the door. The doctor didn't have any administrative costs. The doctor didn't have to even send you a letter and tell you that you owed him money. The doctor had already been paid. If he needed to give you a shot of penicillin, that was another $5. It was $5 for the office call, $5 for a shot of penicillin. I remember one time I had pneumonia, and the doctor said, these kids got pneumonia. They didn't put me in the hospital. They just shot me up with penicillin right there in the doctor's office and said, we'll bring him back next week. Or if it cures it, you don't need to bring him back. And if it doesn't cure it, we'll bring him back and we'll give him another shot. It cured it, and that was the end of it. Cost $10. Now, Americans decided for some reason that they wanted insurance. And of course, it's the insurance that adds all of these added costs to the medical industry or the medical business. We had medicine in 1940, 1950, and 1960, and it didn't cost $10,000 a year to buy insurance. It didn't cost tens of thousands of dollars, you know, to do surgery and heart surgery and so on. And that's because people were healthier 50 years ago than they are today. Now, there are 18 health laws in the Bible. If you practice those 18 health laws in the Bible, you won't get sick. It isn't possible. And the sickness is caused by the violation of one or more of those health laws. Just thought I'd share that with you. If you get sick, you've got one of two causes. Either one, you're starving to death. That is, you know, you've got Alzheimer's disease. That's a selenium deficiency. You've got rickets. That's a vitamin D deficiency. You've got, you know, what's that, vitamin C deficiency, scurvy? You're starving to death. You're missing some vitamin or mineral when you get sick. Or it could be that you're being poisoned. I mean, hell, you might be being poisoned with asbestos, or you might be poisoned with, you know, dioxin or some other chemical, or some combination of the two, for which you may need some kind of medical treatment, diagnosis. So I discovered that if you go into your local doctor and you tell him, I'll pay you in cash, and like the lady we talked about in the last program, if she had had a deal like I do, see, I can get into my doctor anytime I want. Anytime I want. I just call him on the phone, and I say, this is George Gordon. and I pay in gold coin, and I pay cash on the barrel hip. I got this problem, and I need to come in and see you. You just go into the doctor's office. He'll crowd you in. And, you know, if I've got some kind of a serious problem, and I go to the doctor, and he says, oh, my God, you got to go to the hospital, I would be alerted to it right away. I would just pay for it. And maybe I need to go to the hospital. But if I go to the hospital, I don't want the Prudential Insurance Company to trump my doctor's advice. You know, I figured that if I went to a doctor and he said, you need to go to the hospital, and he says, well, you need to stay in here for 5 days. Well, okay, that's bad news. I would rather that I only spend a day in there or 2 days because it would save me money. But if my doctor said, Gordon, you need to stay in here for 5 days, 10 days, or 20 days, and you're going to have to pay for that. I don't want the hospital saying, well, gee, we want to cut costs and save money so Gordon can just get his rectum out of the hospital after 2 days or 3 days and then go home and die. Now, that's what we were looking at in the last program. Now, let's take a look at these codes over here, and let's see what this leads up to. Most patients pay no attention to this maze of numbers on these forms that their doctors give them. But to many doctors, these five digits are their financial lifeblood. These codes determine how much they're going to earn, how quickly they get paid by insurers, and whether they will be reimbursed if they perform two procedures during one visit, or if they must require a patient to return for the second visit. Now, the five-digit number is called the CPT codes. That's short for Current Procedural Terminology. They date back to 1966, when the American Medical Association devised those code numbers to bring some order to billing following the enactment of Medicare. For the first time, a number was used to describe a procedure and service with the aim of making clearer and more precise the actual nature of the services that the physicians rendered. Doctors weren't all that crazy about the idea of using a number rather than words to classify a patient visit, but over time, they grudgingly accepted the codes as a way to streamline the billing. Through the years, as new medical technologies and procedures developed, the AMA steadily added codes, with the total building to more than 7,800 of these codes. And every year, the process of adding or subtracting codes is intensely lobbied and debated in the medical community. And an entrepreneurial company that develops a new device seeks an AMA code for its product. Obtaining one can mean all the difference in the world. Cambridge Heart Incorporated, it's a Bedford, Massachusetts company specializing in products to diagnose cardiac disease, developed a very sophisticated test to identify heart patients at risk. Its microvolt T-wave alternans test measures extremely subtle fluctuations in a person's heartbeat. These tiny variations, counted at 1/1,000,000th of a volt, are detected using proprietary sensors. And like most small health technology companies, Cambridge Heart struggled. It wasn't until the AMA established a CPT code covering the T-wave alternans test that Cambridge began to see hope. Hailing the AMA action, the company's CEO and president, David Chatsnovich, said the CPT code should greatly improve our customers' ability to submit claims efficiently and to be paid quickly. Now, overseeing the codes is one of the AMA's most important yet obscure divisions. It's called the CPT department. It's a multi-million dollar operation. The department and its 16-member editorial panel, which includes 11 physicians, approve these new codes and modify existing codes. In addition to its role in medicine, the division underpins the AMA's financial health. The AMA has trademarked the CPT so that every insurer and any other party that uses the codes must pay the association a royalty. That brings the organization about $70 million a year. And without those royalties, says one medical consultant, the AMA would be out of business. Now, with this shift toward managed care, the CPT codes became even more important, but for an entirely different reason. As insurers looked for ways to bolster profits, the CPT classifications rapidly evolved into a battleground. Here was a way to squeeze doctors. By disregarding or combining certain categories and lumping multiple procedures or services into one category, insurers could reimburse physicians for only a percentage of the care that they had provided. It was a way to screw doctors out of money. So what happened to Dr. Emanuel Porth is fairly typical. He's an orthopedic surgeon in bustling Broward County, north of Miami. Porth has practiced medicine more than 20 years, and once billing wasn't such a hassle. But over time, Porth observed that there was a trend developing. Insurers would be late with payments or refuse to reimburse at all for certain services. Often he would submit a bill for 5 separate procedures and then be reimbursed for only one. Even when he supplied extensive backup documentation, he explained in a deposition, you'd get slapped in the face with a check for $950 for $8,000 worth of services. So Dr. Porth was a victim of what is known in the medical world as downcoding and bundling, two practices that health insurers use to drastically reduce their payments to doctors. Bundling occurs when a physician submits a claim for 2 or more procedures or services to a patient during one office visit, and the insurer bundles them together and then reimburses for just one, typically the one that pays the least. This downcoding takes place when an insurer unilaterally changes the CPT code that a physician has submitted to a code that reimburses at a lower rate. So one of the most common down codes involves new patients. For example, a first-time visit, many physicians seek reimbursement under CPT code 99204, a so-called level 4, meaning that the doctor spent more than the usual amount of time. Well, this would be only natural. You see, after all, any good doctor would spend a disproportionate amount of time compiling a detailed history, reviewing medications, interviewing the patient, and getting to know that person, all to provide appropriate care in the future and to avoid potential mistakes. Nonetheless, many insurers automatically downcode the visit to a 99203 level 3, which assumes shorter visits and pays less. In other cases, health plans reject CPT codes for more than one service, depriving doctors of full reimbursement. Doctors can contest these denials, but the process is costly and time-consuming, and it's often fruitless. Well, let me pause here for a moment and let me tell you a story here, because I have a lot of my students who are doctors come to school here. I had a doctor who's a chiropractor up in Kenai, Alaska, and he complained that he had to charge $35. Now, this was back in the 1980s, I think it was about 1980. Three, four, five, in the mid-80s sometime. He's $35 for a visit to his office, his clinic, Kenai, Alaska. And he said, I've got two girls in my office. One girl spends all of her time on insurance claims and billing. That's all she does. And I got to pay her a pretty good salary for that. You know, if my customers, he said to me, just paid me when they came in the office, it would be a lot simpler and easier for me, and it would cost the patients less. And I said, you know, that's a good point. We talked about it a little bit, and I said, on top of that, the insurance companies oftentimes will down-code your billing to them and they won't pay. And he said, yeah, that's true. And I said, well, do you like insurance businesses? He said, not at all, not at all. So I said, well, you know, in my business school, I cover little things like this. There are a lot of little tricks you know to business. And I said, why don't you convert your patient clientele over to cash instead of insurance? And he said, God, I would lose half of my business, maybe more. And I said, well, yeah, you're going to lose a little business, but how much or what percentage of your business? And I've talked to businessmen before, and if you'll just do this, just think about this for a minute. I had a coin dealer one time that was doing 90% of his business privately and 10% of his business through his store. He had a store in Cleveland, Ohio, coin store. And of all the revenue that he generated in a year's time, 10% of that revenue came through that store. 90% of it was private business with people like me, where he would come over to my house and do a private trade or private transaction. And then I took a look at that and I said, well, where does most of your expense? And he said, 90% of my expense is associated with my store, and only 10% of my expense or cost of goods sold is associated with these private trades. And I said, no, look at this. 90% of your business costs 10% of your overhead. 10% of your business costs 90% of your overhead. You can eliminate 90% of your overhead by giving up 10% of your business. Now, does 10% of your business equal more than that 90% of overhead? And he said, nowhere close. I said, that solves the problem. Close the store. And he did. We did the same analysis with the chiropractor, and he took a look at it and said, you know, if I didn't have insurance business, I could eliminate that second girl in the office. That second girl in the office. And the amount of money that I spend on her doesn't justify this insurance business. So here's what he did. He came up with a pricing program, and it started off like this. It says, office visit, $35, insurance and credit cards. And those credit cards, by the way, cost the merchant 5 or 6%. So a $35 office visit, just take 5% of that, 35 times 0.05, costs the doctor $1.75 out of that $35 to pay the credit card company. Then, of course, the credit card company charges you interest if you don't pay your bill every month. What if the customer just paid cash? So he put that down, cash, $30. I will save you $5 on the office visit. Well, let's just take 5 divided by 30. That's 17%. I'll give you a 17% discount. Instead of giving me a credit card or an insurance card, you pay me in cash, $20 bills, and I will give you a 17% discount. Went a step further. Had another line on there. If you pay me in gold or silver coin, I'll charge you $25 in gold or silver coin. Now, remember, this is a $10 discount off of $35. So let's take 10. Divide that by 35. That's a 29% discount. By putting up that pricing structure, in 1 year, he had moved 90% of his customers from insurance and credit cards to cash and gold and silver coin. They took the 17 to 29% discounts. He virtually eliminated his insurance business. I mean, if people want to fill out the insurance forms and send it into their insurance company, they can do that themselves. And by doing that, they can take the discount and they can bill that 35%. They can pay cash and then charge the insurance company the $35, because that's the rate for insurance and credit cards. Now, there's an example of, you know, use your head and do business in cash, and it'll save you money. Now, let's take your $10,000 a year that you're paying for health insurance. Have you ever thought about taking that $10,000 and putting it in gold coin or something else and just save it. If you don't need any medical services this year or whatever medical services you need, you just pay cash. At the end of 2 years, you got $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000. I mean, that gives you a pretty good chunk of money. Remember, the insurance companies are making money off of your premium. If the insurance company is taking $10,000 a year from you in insurance premiums, they figure that they're going to pay you something less than $10,000 a year. And I can tell you this, they're figuring on paying out less than $5,000. In auto insurance, for every dollar that they take in, they only pay out 11 cents in claims. In fire insurance, it's less than that. It's about a nickel. And I don't know what it is in health insurance, but I know it isn't over 50%. Insurance always makes more than 50%. Now, if that's good business for the insurance company, why isn't it good business for you? That's the way I've always figured. If it's good business for the insurance company, it's good business for me. Now, this Dr. Porth here was a victim of this medical down-coding. So if you doctors out there just thought about it for a minute, you know your problems stem from doing business with insurance companies, so why don't you stop and offer the discount? Instead of that 27% that you're now charging your customers, your patients, to do all this paperwork, why don't you concentrate on eliminating the paperwork and passing the 27% discount onto your customers? It makes you more competitive. And concentrate on building a cash business. I would come to you. I'll pay you cash. And I'll bet you there's a lot of other people out there that'll do their own insurance work. Let the patient, if he wants to buy insurance, let the patients get screwed instead of you, Doc. Well, to Barbara J. Cobuzzi, she's the president of a New Jersey company that represents doctors who challenge these adverse decisions. It's a constant battle, she says. She illustrates the experiences of many doctors with this analogy. Imagine that you take your car to a mechanic to have its transmission repaired. To do the work, the mechanic has to pull the engine. In doing so, he finds a problem in the engine that he repairs. Then he fixes the transmission and then charges for the time that he spent working on both the engine and the transmission. If he were a doctor, Cobuzzi says, he wouldn't get paid for working on the engine because he had to pull that anyway to get at the transmission. Doctors rarely receive an explanation for a lower payment, and all too often they don't realize until later what has happened and how much income they've lost. Furthermore, the CPT codes selected for bundling and downcoding are always changing, and some codes may be accepted by an insurer 1 month and rejected the next. To make matters worse, most doctors deal with several health plans, and a CPT code accepted by one insurer may be rejected by another. The recording is done in secret, or this recoding, rather, is done in secret with little or no information or notification to doctors, and the result is uncertainty and mass confusion, and doctors get screwed. Well, Dr. John Hansen Flashen, he's the chief of pulmonary allergy and critical care at the Hospital of the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia, just had experience. After hearing about downcoding from other doctors, Hansen began reviewing claims filed by his practice for reimbursements from Pennsylvania Blue Shield. And in case after case, he discovered that Blue Shield was replacing certain CPT codes with ones that paid less, even though the level of care being provided by physicians hadn't changed. So as he explained to the medical journalist, if an individual experiences serious complications of major surgery and has a critical illness lasting 6 or 7 days, 3 or 4 days of care would be systematically downcoded at the end of that illness. If that individual subsequently recovers a little bit only to return to the ICU 1 or 2 weeks later for a second critical illness, all of the days in that second critical illness would be downcoded. How do you like that, boys and girls? Now, for the guy that's carrying the insurance, he doesn't care. That's between the doctor and the insurance company. But boys and girls, that's why you're paying $10,000 a year for this health care insurance. So the doctors then have to raise their rates. And then the insurance companies say, well, we've got to cheat the doctors more and more because the doctors keep raising their rates. You know, you've got an endless bureaucracy, a socialized bureaucracy that can be solved very simply. Go to cash, one-on-one, eliminate the middlemen, eliminate the insurance companies with all of these clerical workers. These millions of clerical workers that take about 25% of the whole healthcare pie is going to these middlemen. Knock them out and you can take a 25% cut just in the handling of these insurance claims. Hang on, I got to give you a little note here. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide over the internet. Now, for more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school, 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to the authors and publications used on this program. and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. The endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications so endorsed or recommended will reciprocate. Now, most of the authors and publications cited on this program are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review, or vice versa. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org, or you can call direct, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Tonight, we're reviewing a book called Critical Condition by Donald Bartlett, B-A-R-L-E-T-T. And James Steele, S-T-E-E-L, published by Doubleday of New York. Copyrighted 2004, November 2004, fairly recent book, 6 months old or so. I read the book and I said to myself, well, let me share this with our listening audience. Let me tell you some of the problems that are out there and recommend to you a couple, three solutions. Because I said yesterday that Americans are faced with the Social Security problem, the pension system collapse, the dollar problem, health care, obesity, Medicare, Iraq, Afghanistan, the draft, North Korea, peak oil. I mean, there's just problems and problems and problems out there. Well, then it seems like to me we needed some solutions. Now, I'm an old country boy, and I don't have any medical problems. I don't have a problem with my doctor. I'm not complaining about these problems being brought out in this book. Now, I can see millions of Americans that don't have health care insurance. I'm one of them. I don't have any health care insurance. I haven't had health care insurance since I left the Kaiser plan when I worked for the union. I was in the union, you know, the machinist union. That was about 1968. I had insurance. I left that and went out on my own, and I haven't had any since. Now, of course, there are some health laws that you should be aware of, and if you could practice those health laws, and then take that $10,000 a year that you're spending on health care premiums and stick that, you know, put it aside. You know, stick it over in a fund someplace just in case you might need some money. You know, insurance companies aren't in business to do you any favors. They're in business to make money. So that $10,000 a year, they're not planning on spending that $10,000 that you give them in insurance premiums on your health care. They plan on spending maybe $1,000 or $2,000 of it and pocketing the difference. So health care insurance is a very profitable item. You might as well go into your own personal health care insurance and make that profit yourself. And especially if you practice the health laws, if you don't get sick, why should you give your money to somebody else? Why don't you benefit from it? Well, Kelly grew especially frustrated by rejections and slow payments. Downcoding not only affects doctors' income. Dr. Hansen Flashen maintains, but it is also the potential to harm patients. Every patient who needs critical care is experiencing a tragedy of a lifetime. And he said such problems require an immediate response by a physician. If physicians, after a long day, are worrying whether they're to be paid or how much they're to be paid, I worry that they will not provide the best level of services that they know how to provide under the circumstances. And I think, in a more general sense, quality of care is eroding when physicians cannot trust insurance carriers to pay them fairly and honestly for the services that they provide. Let me pause right here. I'll say amen to that. When I go into the doctor, I don't want that doctor short-circuiting me and giving me slipshod, shoddy care because he's in a hurry, because there's some bureaucratic guidebook over there that says that this ailment should only take the doctor 15 minutes. Hell, I might be something different than the usual. Maybe it's going to take him a half hour, 45 minutes. So anytime I go to a doctor, that doctor knows full well, coming right out of the chute, that he's going to get paid for exactly what he charges. So when the doctor says to me, I'm going to charge you $100, I tell the story over here. One day I jumped off the back of my dump truck out here, you know, and I could feel the pain in my heel of my foot, and it hurt. And I thought to myself, well, you know, that'll teach you, you old fart, jump off the back of this truck. So I hobbled around for a couple of days, and it didn't feel too good. And my wife said to me, she looked at him, she said, you've got gout. Gout, that's what you've got. And I said, no, no, woman, now lighten up. I jumped off the back of the truck, and I could feel the pain when I jumped off, so I know that I broke my ankle, or I broke the heel of my foot. I got a broken foot, that's what I've got. She said, now you got gout. So I said, well. So I called the local doctor here in Gainesville, and I said, hey, doc, schedule me in, would you? And the girl says, well, come on in. So I jumped in the pickup, and I went to town, 10 miles east of here. I went into the doctor, and I said, well, I'll tell you what I want to buy here today. I want you to x-ray that foot and tell me what's wrong with it. So he did. He took two x-rays of it, and he looked it all over, and he said, well, you don't have a broken foot. And I said, doc, well, it hurts real bad. What do you think's wrong with it? Now, I didn't tell him that. I didn't tell him the old lady said that you got gout. I didn't breathe a word of it. Well, he thought about it and thought about it for a while, and he said, I don't know. So he wrote me up a prescription. And I said, well, what's this for, doc? And he said, well, that's a pain medication. That's a prescription for pain. And I said, doc, I don't need a prescription for pain. I need a solution. I got to find out what causes that pain there in the heel of my foot. He didn't know. Now that's a doctor for you. See, that doctor, he'll prescribe some pain medication for you. He treats. He doesn't diagnose. He doesn't cure. He treats. If you want to cure something, you're going to have to do that yourself. So I said, Doc, no, I don't need this prescription. What do I owe you? He said, $75 for the office visit and the two x-rays. So I paid him the $75 and I walked out. Well, I knew more than I knew yesterday. I know now that I don't have a broken foot. Cost $75, and now I know it doesn't have a broken foot. But I didn't pay $10,000 for health insurance. And then I have to go to the doctor and argue and fight and complain about the health insurance company. It cost $75. All right. So I came back home and I said, well, it's not a broken foot. And she said, I told you that twice, three times. You're not listening. Pay attention, young. She said, you've got gout. I said, okay, lady, well, what do you do for gout? She said, cherry juice. Cherry juice. Black cherry juice. I said, okay, lady. Get it out. So she did. So I started drinking that black cherry juice, and within 24 hours, the pain was gone. The problem was gout. Gout. The doctor couldn't figure out what it was. Well, see, out here on the farm, you know, sometimes we'll kill a cow. And then those T-bone steaks, you know, coming off that backstrap tastes pretty good. And so, you know, you just go out there and you hack one off and take it in, fry it up. And then you hack another one off and fry it up. Pretty soon you're eating too much protein. That's what gout is. You know, it's just eating too much protein too fast. And so then you get this pain. You get this this inflammation in your joints, you know. Some people call it arthritis, and they probably have gout. Easy enough to take care of. Quit eating protein for a while. Go on a vegetarian diet for 4 or 5 days. Drink black cherry juice, and it'll go away. That's just the way that game is played. Now, let's carry this on. Well, ostensibly used to save money, this downcoding and bundling actually consume millions of dollars in unnecessary administrative expenses that otherwise might go for patient care. Now, just talk to doctors, nurses, office managers, technicians, bookkeepers, and other personnel in physicians' offices, and they'll tell you about the time that they waste on the phone with insurers, the long stretches spent waiting on hold, and their frustration over not being able to get through to someone who can explain why a code was changed or rejected. The experience of Dr. Glenn Kelly of Colorado, he's a vascular surgeon, mirrors that of many physicians. And in a court deposition, Kelly said that health insurers refuse to call back about rejected claims. That is common to make 3 or 4 phone calls before getting through to a person in an insurer's call center. And that even when someone is reached, the person has little or no knowledge of medical terminology, all of which has imposed an enormous workload on his office, diverting time away from patient care. I think there was an intent to complicate the system and make it unresponsive to the physician so that we were unable to obtain payments or unable to obtain them in a timely fashion, he said. Oh, I got to pause right here, Doc. Yours truly here was trained as an insurance adjuster back in the 1960s. And so let me tell you how insurance adjusters work. An insurance adjuster works for the insurance company. I'm a guy who's a hired gun. And you have a claim, and we have a policy, we have a contract with you, and I analyze that and I say, gosh, we owe you some money. So my job is to screw you out of as much money as possible and then delay the payment of the balance as long as I can. So this complicated system of paperwork is carefully contrived to take as much time as possible, and here's why that works that way. You see, the insurance company lends that money out, their profits and their premiums, they lend that out. They build big buildings, and they have these projects that they work on. And they figure that they make 10% interest or 10% profit on their investments. Sometimes they make more, sometimes they make less, but 10% is their goal. 10% is their norm. All right, now let's suppose that you're an insurance company, and let's say that you've got 1,000 claims pending out there for $1,000 each. So let's figure out how much money that is. That's 1,000 times 1,000 equals $1 million. So you got $1 million worth of claims out there. Now, if you take that $1 million worth of claims, and then you take that times 0.10, that's $100,000 worth of profit that you're making off of that $1 million that's invested, $100,000 profit a year. So we've got $1 million worth of other people's money invested that by contract we have to pay to these people. And if we have to pay them, then we're going to lose $100,000 worth of interest this year. But if I could delay the payment for 365 days, then we would make an extra $100,000. Well, I probably can't justify delaying payment for 365 days, but here's what I'll do. I'll come up with all of this paperwork, and I come to you and I say, or you send in your claim, and I send it back to you, and I say, well, you forgot to fill in line 15. So you take it and you fix line 15, and you send it back to me, and I say, okay, we'll process this. Then you don't hear from us. Well, another 3 weeks goes by or a month, and then you send us a letter, and you say, hey, listen, how come you're not paying attention? We say, oh, my God, I'm sorry as I can be. We must have lost your form. Send us in another claim. Now, I've stalled you off for a month, and then you send me in another claim. And then I put you on hold and I screw you over and I waste a lot of time and so on. And we're doing this to all of you people out there systematically and all of the time. We're not doing that because we're stupid and inefficient and we can't process your claim. We don't want to pay you. We know we have to pay you something. And so we disallow some of these claims. And you doctors out there, we stalled you off for 90 days. We're using your money. This is an interest-free loan. Doc, we owe you $1,000, but it's an interest-free loan for 30 days. Now let's take the $100,000, average daily interest, and divide that by 365, and that's $273.97 a day. So every day that we can postpone paying these 1,000 claims, we make $273. Let's just go times two. $547 if I can stall you people off for 2 days. Times three. $1,643.82 if I can stall you off for a week. Can you see what's going on here? It's just money. It's nothing personal, you people out there. You know, it's just business, just profit. Now, Kelly grew especially frustrated by rejections and slow payments from the insurer, Cigna. And after he reported difficulties with the company to the Colorado State Insurance Commissioner's Office and the Colorado State Medical Society, Cigna canceled its contract with him. Kelly believed that because the delays and denials happened so often, they were intentional maneuvers to prevent us from getting paid. Well, I'm here to tell you, as an old-time claims adjuster, that's the way I was trained. I learned that when I went to school. So on that score, he and other physicians are hardly alone. Patients encounter a similar practice in their dealings with insurers and call centers. Hospitals and insurance bills are needlessly obscure, seemingly designed to confuse the recipients and secure a payment, especially from the elderly and the less knowledgeable, when in fact no money is owed. Shucks. Sometimes you people out there get bills from insurance companies and hospitals and doctors, and you really don't owe the money. Now, I'm going to tell you a little story here. The IRS does this. See, the IRS has a computer, and their computer just turns out computer-generated forms. These numbers aren't specifically correct, but I can give you the general gist of what's going on here. See, the IRS discovered that when they send somebody a bill for $87, they review your tax return, and you screwed up. You know, you owed them $3,287, and you sent them $3,200, and they audit your tax return. They find out that there's $87.23 that you owe, plus 60% penalty, plus interest, and so they send you a bill for $126.92. And they discovered that around 87% of people that they send those bills out just remit the $126 without any argument. Only 13% of people would sit there and say, I don't owe you this money, and I ain't paying it. Let's litigate. So they got to thinking about that, and they said, well, let's test this. So they just sent out, I don't know, 100,000 when they first tested, sent out 100,000 bogus claims. They hadn't even audited these people's returns. They just sent out, you know, you owe $87, and they send out to the next guy, you owe $126, and they found that 87% of those people send them out. So every year, the IRS sends out 15 million of these bogus computer-generated letters. If you've ever received one, it simply says, you've underpaid your taxes, we've audited your return, and you owe $62, $87, $126, just an odd amount of money. And 87% of you people will remit the money. And so the government makes a lot of extra cash. Well, insurance companies do the same thing, so do hospitals. In other words, you people will say to yourselves, look, it isn't worth the hassle dinking around over this $87. Well, you know, if I could send out a million letters that says to a million people, you owe me $87, and 87% of that million people would send me that $87 or $126 or whatever I claim they owe, now, I don't ever have to sue or mess around with the other 13%. Look at the amount of money I could make. Now, there's a insurance company, I think it's called Pacific Mutual Indemnity Company, called HASLIP, or versus HASLIP, H-A-S-L-I-P. And they discovered, there's this insurance company, they discovered that if they have a claim from a policyholder of $5,000, that if they don't pay it, it's going to cost the policyholder more than $5,000 to go hire a lawyer and sue them to make them pay the $5,000. So most people, when they go to a lawyer and find out that the insurance company dinked them for $5,000, it's going to cost them $10,000 to collect the money, they just forget the $5,000, drop the insurance policy, and go to a different insurance company. And the insurance company in question here just goes out and sells another policy to somebody else. Well, they did that, and they did that to a lady named HASLIP, H-A-S-L-I-P, and the U.S. Supreme Court got that case, and they made a change. They got the new HASLIP rule. You can sue the insurance company and get any amount of punitive damages. In the old days, you could only sue for the $5,000 plus $5,000 in punitive damages. That was $10,000. Maybe one guy in 1,000 would go ahead and do it. Mrs. HASLIP did. Took the case to the Supreme Court. It cost her $250,000 to do that. She won the case. And now, you know, just for your information, boys and girls, you know, you can sue for, there's a 12-part rule you got to follow. And, you know, it isn't just cut and dry. But if you can meet this 12-part rule, that insurance company can be sued for the $5,000 plus $1 million in punitive damages to punish them for these thefts. And that's just what they're doing here. It's just theft. So you doctors out there, you know, if you knew something about the law, you know, you could ding those insurance companies for dinging it if you just paid attention. Now, they send a partial negotiated payment for the services to the physicians and then suggest to the patients that they're obliged to pay the difference. The sophisticated know otherwise, but to wade through the billing morass, patients may spend several hours complying with voicemail options, grilling all center clerks, and assembling and forwarding paperwork before successfully resolving an erroneous claim. This is just part of the process of average daily balancing at the insurance company. We're just stalling this off, and every day we can stall you off whatever we owe you. We're getting 10% of that times whatever, divided by 360. Often the first statement from an insurer will show no payments to the healthcare provider or notification that the patient owes a large portion or the entire bill without any explanation. For example, an insurance company bill for physical therapy shows a therapist charge of $375, network rate $192.33, actual benefits paid zero, patient's portion due $192.33. That prompts the first in a series of dealings with call center clerks, and when they feign ignorance, their supervisors and then their supervisors. If the clerk insists that there is no record of a prescription for the treatment, the patient must root through his or her records to find a copy of the prescription, assuming a copy was even made, and then fax it to the call center. More conversations with more call center clerks follow. Probably these call center clerks are over in Bangladesh or India or the Philippines before the patient receives another version of the statement showing paid in full. Depending on the size of the bill, many patients are simply worn down by the process, or they simply don't have the time to devote to the issue, and they forward a payment that they don't even owe. They just say, oh, to hell with all that. And that's but one of the many different ways in which insurance companies, trick their patients into paying bills that the insurers themselves are obliged and obligated to pay. Their dealings with the elderly are even more egregious. For their part, insurers will insist that these are just errors, but as in the case of with insurers' treatment of doctors, the frequency of such errors suggests otherwise. Well, I'm here to tell you, as a whistleblower, as an old-timey insurance adjuster, that's exactly what they do. Next time, I'll tell you about old Emil Crow. Let me write that here in the margin. Emil Crow. Tomorrow night's program, the Emil Crow story. I'll tell you how insurance companies screw you and what you can do to protect yourself from it. That's next time on The Law Hour. Well, we're about out of time here, boys and girls, so let me give you a couple of reminders here. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, manager, or staff of the network or local radio station. For more information about The Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call the Law School Direct 417-273-4967. Now, you've been listening to The Law Hour and editorial review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law Hour, please go to the website, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Time's up. See you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.